to go. Hello, everyone. Namo myoho renge kyo. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you're taking care of your health and that you're okay as you watch this video or listen to this podcast. Don't forget to download the podcast anywhere where you get your podcasts. Again, it's called The Buddhahood Podcast, all three words. All right, let's continue with this long treatise that Nichiren provided to be shared through the Sangha, through his subordinate disciples, those who are monks dedicating their life to the correct transmission of Shakyamuni's teachings. Guided by Nichiren, they are given these kinds of long letters or goshos to explicitly be shared amongst all the areas in Nichiren or Lotus Sutra practitioners in Japan, and so on, right? So this is a document for them and for historic dissemination. So we continue from where we left off. Nichiren says, on the Peacock Sutra was written by Shinzei, a disciple of Kobo, who we know now had his own political ambitions and so on. And therefore, it is difficult to trust what it says. Is it likely that a person of such deluded views would have trouble to read the writings of the courtiers and other important families, or Encho, on which to base his account? One should also check the writings of Dosho, Genin, and Doyu to see if they have anything to say on the matter. See, there was widespread corruption here. The text says, quote, suddenly his mouth opened and he turned into the golden-colored Buddha Mahavarachana. What does it mean by the expression, his mouth opened? The writer probably intended to write the characters meaning the area between the eyebrows, but he mistakenly wrote those for mouth instead. Because he wrote a book of fabrication, he quite likely made mistakes of this kind. Oh my goodness. This is the harshest condemnation that I've heard from Nichiren, that these people who wrote their own commentaries to bolster their claims. Again, since their teachers and the teachers before them have already decided that the Lotus Sutra wasn't so important, childish theory, remember, they can now, with their mudras and mantras and the Mahavarachana, justify all sorts of magical thinking, ritualistic things, because it entertains the masses and they'll just gain more followers by writing any old thing. But though that is, terrible, right? Nichiren's saying they're also so undereducated. I don't want to say illiterate, because they were, the monks of these days in the centuries before and since. They're the people in society that are charged with holding together the history and the quality of education. They're the learned ones. Today we have professors and doctors and so forth, but back in the day, since Shakyamuni, through India, China, you hear about the Brahmin class in India, for instance. They're the highly educated ones. They're the ones responsible for keeping the historical documents and documentations of the culture. This is very high level stuff. It's like in the United States, the Library of Congress is responsible for hanging on to the scholarship and the truth about events and the writings and the commentaries and so forth, right? And from that comes the whole educational dissemination of information, right? So the monks, these head monks, the great teachers. They're called great teachers. Why? Because they're responsible for holding all of this high-level information. Certainly, they're the most educated. Well, Nichiren is indicting them by saying they don't even know how to write good. You know, that in making up their stories, they use the wrong characters, the wrong calligraphic characters. And so even their teachings, even though they're muddying the correct teachings, their teachings are muddied to one another. So things are just devolving very quickly, right? It's amazing that he points this out. And we know, you and I, from previous study, that there's been ancient dialogue about the tuft of hair between the Buddha's eyes, right? Something referenced as a sort of an emanating intelligence, right? It's very symbolic, but it's also very consistent. Only by this time, in trying to indicate that, he used the wrong character and he said the mouth, the open mouth. So all of a sudden, this idea of this emanating Mahāvārācana Buddha from the mental cognition of this teacher is an open mouth. That's a whole different symbology, right? What did he say? Magic words? Is that what Mahāvārācana Buddha looks like? You see statues of him, his mouth is gaping open. What does this mean? Right? But nobody seems to question it. They just go with it. Nichiren says, the whole passage says, quote, the great teacher thereupon formed his hands in the wisdom mudra. There we go with the, and faced south. Suddenly, his mouth opened and he turned into the golden colored Buddha, Mahāvārācana. Now, in the fifth volume of the Nirvana Sutra, we read, quote, Kashyapa spoke to the Buddha, saying, world-honored one, I will no longer depend upon the four ranks of sages. Why is this? Because in the Goshila Sutra that the Buddha preached for the sake of Goshila, it is said that the devil king in heaven, because he is determined to try to destroy the Buddhist teachings, will turn himself into the likeness of a Buddha. He will have all the 32 features and 80 characteristics of a Buddha, will be solemn and imposing appearance, and a round halo of light will radiate from him 10 feet in all directions. His face will be round and full like the moon at its fullest and brightest, and the tuft of white, there it is what I was saying, and the tuft of white hair in between his eyebrows will be whiter than snow, .. From his left side will come water, and from his right side will come fire, end quote. So Nichiren continues, again, in the sixth volume of the Nirvana Sutra, it is recorded, quote, the Buddha announced to Kashyapa, after I have passed into Nirvana, this devil king Papiyas will in time try to destroy the correct teachings of mine, so on. He will change his form into that of an arhat or a Buddha. The devil king, though still subject to illusion, will assume the form of one of who has been freed from illusion and will try to destroy the correct teachings of mine. So from the actual scholarship of the history of Buddhism, Nichiren finds these quotes. He's just excellent at this. And he puts it up next to this open mouth invocation or embodiment, somehow magically turns into Mahāvārācana Buddha, which, as you'll recall, is an emanation, a storytelling device of Shakyamuni Buddha. So quite literally, this awakening sutra, speaking sutra, declares this as some kind of a validation of this teacher and the Mahāvārācana Sutra, while doing so makes its own accusation of what's foretold by Shakyamuni himself is going to happen. These fakers are going to make themselves look like they're some kind of an incantation of Buddha, a Buddha, not Shakyamuni Buddha, and in an effort to destroy my teachings. And so they're copping to it. They're like, I did it. I'm not. Just the foolishness of and the level of foolishness of this, people wouldn't normally know, because they're not within the Buddhist order. They don't have these original documents to read. And memory is so short in human nature, right? So this is one of the reasons scholarship is so important. But you have these posers who will pose a new scholarship of their own. And in doing so, in this particular case, Nichiren is showing that if they were really educated and scholarly, they would know better than to do something that's already been part of their education, really, that this is an indication that they're false, that their avarice and foolishness has taken over. They're stating it. It's so obvious. I don't know. I think that's pretty amazing. Nichiren blows my mind. Okay. He goes on. The great teacher Kobo declared that in comparison to the flower garland in Mahavacharya Sutra, the Lotus Sutra was a piece of childish theory, right? And this same man, we are told, appeared in the form of a Buddha. What I used to say when I was younger is he's peeing all over his own pedestal. He's put himself up there and then he ridicules himself without even realizing it. He must be the devil who, as the Nirvana Sutra states, will change his shape, which is still subject to illusion, into that of a Buddha and attempt to destroy the correct teaching of Shakyamuni. Well, there it is. This correct teaching, referred to in the Nirvana Sutra, is the Lotus Sutra. Therefore, we find later on in the Nirvana Sutra the statement, quote, "It has already been a long time since I attained to Buddhahood," end quote. The text also says, quote, "When this sutra was preached, the prediction had already been made in the Lotus Sutra that the 8,000 voice hearers would attain Buddhahood. Shakyamuni, many treasures, and the Buddhas of the 10 directions declared with regard to the various sutras that the Lotus Sutra represents the truth. The Mahavacharya and all the other sutras do not represent the truth. Yet the great teacher Kobo appeared in the form of a Buddha and announced that compared to the flower garland and Mahavacharya sutras, the Lotus Sutra is a piece of childish theory. If the words of the Buddha are true, then Kobo must be none other than the devil king in heaven, must he not?" Yeah, I think, Nichiren, I think you've adequately shown that Kobo is a charlatan, right? Again, he goes on, The matter of the three-pronged diamond pounder appears to be particularly suspicious, yeah. It would be difficult to believe, even if a Chinese who had not known the circumstances had come to the Japan and happened to dig up the pounder. Surely someone must have been sent earlier to bury it in that particular spot. Oh my goodness. This is starting to read like a television drama. Yeah, when I rolled my eyes at that statement earlier when we read it, the idea that he had this sacred object and he threw it in the air and it would tell him where to spread his teachings, and then sometime later, the following year or whenever it was, he just happened to be digging in the ground and, oh goodness, look, it's what's here. This is where it landed. Yeah. Yeah, 1,000 miles away. Wow, he's got quite an arm, this guy. Anyway, since Kobo was a Japanese, he could have arranged such a thing. No, really? There are many such wild and absurd stories associated with his name. Such an incidents hardly lend support to the assertion that his teachings accord with the will of the Buddha. Thus, the doctrines of the True Word, Zen, and Nembutsu schools spread and prospered in Japan. It went unchecked. There was just nobody to point out baloney. Nobody did. They just went with the flow, right? Again, authoritarian regimes. This happens all the time. Eventually, Nichiren says, Takahira, the retired emperor of Oki, who was the 82nd sovereign, began making efforts to overthrow the acting administrator. Since he was the sovereign, the leader of the nation, people supposed that, even without assistance, it would be as easy as a lion pouncing on a hare, or a hawk seizing a pheasant. Moreover, for a period of several years, appeals had been made at Mount Hiei, the temples of Toji and Onjoji, and the seven major temples of Nara, as well as to the sun goddess, great Bodhisattva Hachiman, and the deities of Sano, Kamo, and Kasuga shrines, asking that the emperor's enemies be subdued and that the deities lend their aid. Yet, when war broke out, the imperial forces were not able to hold out for more than 2 or 3 days. In the end, the three retired emperors were exiled to the province of Sado, Awa, and Oki, respectively, where their lives came to a close. Moreover, not only was the prelate Omuro, who was leading the meditations to subdue the enemies of the court, driven out of Toji Temple, but his favorite, the page Seteka, who was as dear to him as his very eyes, was beheaded. Thus, as the Lotus Sutra says, the curses in the end rebound upon the originator. Cause and effect again, right? But this is a trifling matter compared to what is to come. Really. Hereafter, I have no doubt that the officials and the countless common people of Japan will without exception suffer a fate like that of heaps of dry grass to which a torch has been set, or like huge mountains crumbling and valleys being filled up, for our country will be attacked by enemies from abroad. He's making another prediction, right? Simply based on the fact that people are not rising up against all this corruption. They're just going with it. So they become complicit, right? I, Nichiren, am the only one in the whole country of Japan who understands why these things will happen. But if I speak out, I will be treated as King Chao of the Yin Dynasty treated Pekan, tearing open his chest, as King Qie of the Xia Dynasty treated Quang Longfeng, cutting off his head, or as King Damira treated the venerable Aryashima, beheading him. I will be banished like the monk Chu Tao Sheng, or branded on the face like the Tripitaka master Fa Tao. In the Lotus Sutra, however, it is written, quote, we care nothing for our bodies or lives, but are anxious only for the unsurpassed way. Which doesn't mean, you know, we throw our bodies down. There's no ritual suicides going on here. What they're saying is earthly attachments, earthly pleasures. All of those wants, attachments in the human form take place in the idea of the body. Right? This is nothing new. Every religion on earth fetishizes the body in some way. You know, with the Christians, it's all about reproduction, sex. Oh, yes, go forth and multiply, but at the same time, be very ashamed that you're having to use your genitalia. Oh, my goodness, don't talk about that. It's crazy, the fetishizing of our bodies. In a way, it makes sense because this is our greatest attachment, isn't it? But when we talk about it in Buddhism like this, we're not talking about nihilism. We're not talking about getting rid of the body. What we're saying is our focus in our minds. Remember, Buddhism is about how the mind functions. So rather than allowing our monkey mind of attachments, right, emanations of the body, if you will, all of those pleasures, desires, as Nichiren says, use them. Use them to refocus your mind on Gohanzon, on Myoho Rengekyo. Use it. It's part and parcel of what we are in samsara. Samsara being the place where we instantiate as a conscious being. So that's great. Don't get rid of that. Use it. Use it to your advantage so that you commit all of that energy to awakening your Buddha-ness. They coexist. It's just that one focus leaves you suffering and in terrible indecision and attached and all of these things, you know, suffering. Life is suffering. And the other is an awakened, clear appreciation and amazement at this entire passion play of the process of life. You, me, the world, plants, earth, universe, all of it. It's unfathomable. But through awakening practice, you can begin to feel the flow of that, that you are just an experiential moment to moment to moment to moment of this great process of life. What an amazing thing, right? If you could even begin to conceive of it, it kind of floors you. All of us have seen great things, whether in person or on television or whatever, and they're awe-inspiring. What is that awe about? That awe is about that this is the life that we are of, that we participate in, that we get to navigate and influence. Oh man, how amazing is that? And the Nirvana Sutra warns, it is like a royal envoy who rather, even though it costs him his life, in the end conceal none of the words of his ruler. If in the present existence I am so fearful for my life that I fail to speak out, then in what future existence will I ever attain Buddhahood? In other words, in what successive moment will I be able to actually awaken my Buddhahood if in this moment I don't speak out, and I just accept for the benefit of my body, my bodily existence, right? If I cower in the face of valuing and keeping my body permanent, and the body being not just this body, but everything that I enjoy attached to, if I'm willing to put aside the amazing process of the universe that I'm in, of, and part of, then what am I truly saving? What am I hanging on to? And I'm replacing my potential Buddhahood with this life of attachments and sufferings. How does that make sense? If you really understand the teachings of Buddhism, it's either one or the other. There's really no gray area. Or in what future existence will I ever be able to bring salvation to my parents and my teacher? With thoughts such as these, uppermost in my mind, this is Nietzsche talking, right? I decided that I must begin to speak out. And just as I had expected, I was ousted. Of course. I was vilified, I was attacked, and I suffered wounds. Well, my body did anyway, right? Finally, on the 12th day of the 5th month of the 1st year of Kocho era, 1261, the year with the cyclical sign Kanoto Tori, having incurred the wrath of the authorities, I was banished to Ito in the province of Izu. Eventually, on the 22nd day of the 2nd month in the 3rd year of Kocho, cyclical sign Mizunoto I, I was pardoned and allowed to return. The beginning of this seesaw, right? After that, I became more determined than ever to attain enlightenment and continued to speak out. So you see, he's saying it. He's not just walking around arrogantly saying, I know, nobody else does, right? You could see him that way. But the truth is, he was pursuing his own enlightenment. And in order to do that, he had to be true to the teachings, not the erroneous ones that went this way and that for political reasons, but as a monk sincerely trying to awaken to his own Buddha nature, he had to follow the guidance of Shakyamuni Buddha, not these other posers. And so he had to continue to speak out. Accordingly, the difficulties I encountered became increasingly severe. Like great waves that rise up against up in a gale, I experienced with my own body the kind of attacks with sticks and staves that Bodhisattva Never Disparaging suffered in ancient times, in the expedient means, in the Lotus Sutra, right? It would seem that even the persecution suffered by the monk realization of virtue in the latter age after the passing of the Buddha joy increasing could not compare to my trials. Nowhere in all the 66 provinces and the two offshore islands of Japan, not for a day, not for an hour, could I find a place to rest in safety. Right? The shogunate was pretty severe. Shut this guy up. He's weakening our hold over the people. He's telling them and he's letting them know that they're in control of their own enlightenment. We can't have that. Right? And every time they exiled him or threatened his life, he would survive it because there wasn't. Why? Why? Why would you think that was the case? Because the samurai and the shogunate were so compassionate? I think not. I think that Nichiren, having had the bones to speak truth to power, had allies and an upwelling amongst those who followed his teachings of the Lotus Sutra, and they were practicing and they were chanting, and this was lending energy, powerful energy, validation of life energy that upheld Nichiren's survival of all these things. I don't want to get mystical about it. I'm just talking about energy here. Otherwise, why wouldn't they have succeeded in beheading him? Or exiling him till he passed away, like those other examples. It didn't happen. Nichiren survived, and he came back. And every time he came back, he got louder. So he converted more people, and there was a larger base of people working toward their enlightenment, well of energy, which would at once piss some people off, and people in power, so they would once again attack him. But also, they couldn't succeed because this upswell of Myoho Renge Kyo was too great to overcome. Whatever the particulars, energetically speaking, this is what's happening, right? Even sages who persevere in their practice as earnestly as did Rahula in ancient times, strictly observing all the 250 precepts at that time, or men who are as wise as Purna speak evil of Nichiren when they encounter him, even worthies who are as honest as the upright and court officials, as the court officials Wei Chang and Fujiwara no Yoshifusa, when they see Nichiren, forsake reason and treat him unjustly. Because they're confronted with their own political and shameful deeds, right? Actions. How much more so is this the case with the ordinary people of the day, the people who are influenced by these? That's in fact even more dangerous in a way, because that can grab you wherever you are, in hiding or not. They behave like dogs who have seen a monkey, or hunters in pursuit of a deer. Throughout the whole of Japan, there is not one single person who says, perhaps this man has some reason for his behavior. Well, in fact, they were his followers. But nobody was standing up. Everybody kind of did it in hush-hush at home. Don't let them know. Don't tell the neighbors. If they find out, the samurai will come and take all our stuff or kill us. So practicing Lotus Sutra in Japan at this time was kind of a foreboding thing, hidden thing. But still, the effort for Cosa Nerufa was there, right? People believed that Nichiren was correct, but nobody was speaking out, so it was up to Nichiren to do so. And Nichiren spoke out not just on corner and city blocks. He knew that in order to convert the people of Japan, he had to take on the biggest authorities. Wow. But that is only to be expected, he says. For whenever I come upon a person who recites the Nembutsu, I tell him that those who believe in the Nembutsu will fall into the hell of incessant suffering. Whenever I come upon a person who honors the true word teachings, I tell him that the true word is an evil, unlife-affirming, negative doctrine that will destroy the nation. So he's not shy about speaking out. Like I just said, that's the one unique thing about Nichiren. And to the ruler of the nation who honors the Zen school, I declare that the Zen is the invention of a heavenly devil. It's not Shakyamuni's teachings. Since I willingly bring these troubles upon myself, when others vilify me, I don't rebuke them. Even if I wanted to rebuke them, there are too many of them. And even when they strike me, I feel no pain, for I have been prepared for their blows from the very beginning. I knew this would happen. And so I went about the ever-increasing vigor and with ever-increasing vigor and ever less concern for my own safety, trying to persuade others to change their ways. As a result, several hundred Zen monks, several thousand Nembutsu believers, and even more true word teachers went to the magistrate of the men of powerful families, or to their wives or their widows who were lay nuns, and filled their ears with endless slanders concerning me. You got to do something about Nichiren. He's this, he's that, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to pause here for a second just to clarify in case you might have missed it. Along with this in-depth analysis of the history of Japan, the teachers of Japan, the way the teachers got corrupted and the way they continued the corruption, he's now talking about his own experience because it's very relevant to those who are looking to Nichiren for guidance in secret, because they can't have a temple dedicated to them in their practice. They don't have large gatherings, places where they can all practice together. They have to congregate in people's houses and be quiet and not let it known that they're following and practicing the Lotus Sutra, because the authorities say Lotus Sutra, child theory, you know, do these hand positions and pray like this. And so they see in Nichiren's words and the documentation as they study that Nichiren is practicing correctly, that Nichiren understands how to attain Buddhahood in this life through Shakyamuni's teachings without these corruptions of the day. But they have to be very careful. And at the same time, they're witnessing Nichiren go through exiles and threats on his life. And their neighbors are trying to do him in and spreading rumors and so forth. So not only do they feel additionally hidden and unable to practice freely, other than in their own home and by themselves, but there's a possibility of doubt coming into their minds. Should I be doing this? I mean, everybody's saying these nasty things about Nichiren and the Lotus Sutra, and maybe I should just cave in and do what everyone else is doing. So Nichiren is taking the opportunity in this Gosho, which, as I've said, is not only to speak to his head disciples, his inner circle, but for them to propagate amongst all of these practicing bodies all over the country. So he's taking this moment to encourage them and let them know that this isn't unexpected, that Nichiren is kind of flaunting it, right? At their nose. Here, come and get me. I'm correct. I'm practicing correctly. You are the demise of this country. And the country is getting worse and worse as far as civil wars and samurais going at each other. And it's to the point where Mongols are invading the country because everything's in such disarray. So there's plenty of proof that what Nichiren is saying is correct, but he's also wanting to quell their fears or possible doubts because he, Nichiren, is incurring such wrath. You know, how much more so will this happen to his followers, right? Finally, all were convinced that I was the gravest offender in the entire nation, for it was said that in my capacity as a monk, I was saying meditations and spells for the destruction of Japan, and that I had reported that the late lay monks of Saimyoji and Gokuraku-ji had fallen into the hell of incessant suffering. Those widows who were lay nuns insisted that investigation was unnecessary. Rather, I should have my head cut off at once, and my disciples should likewise be beheaded or exiled to distant lands or placed in confinement. So infuriated were they that their demands for punishment were immediately carried out. Squeaky wheel, right? So, you might say, well, that's what you're doing, Nichiren. But there's a huge difference, right? He wasn't just making stuff up. This is why it was all the more enraging, because he could show documentation and scholarship to say, look, that's what this says. Not just me. I'm just trying to do it correctly. It's in the documentation that you guys are messing and corrupting all of this. You're bringing your own demise onto you. They don't want to hear that, right? Arrogance, self-preservation, attachment. On the night of the 12th day of the 9th month in the 8th year of Bunen 1271, cyclical sign Kanoto Hitsuji, I was to have been beheaded at Tatsunokuchi in the province of Sagami. But for some reason, the execution was postponed, and that night I was taken to a place called Echi. Now, there's different stories about that night, some heavenly activities. Some think it was a solar eclipse that happened around that time period. Some think it was maybe a meteor shower or something. But something in the heavens spooked the executioners, and they let him go. They just were satisfactorily spooked. Now, whether you want to believe that that's caused by Nichiren, as you read here, isn't taking credit for any of that. He's just saying that for some reason, I wasn't beheaded. How is that possible? Because this happens regularly. Why was I spared? On the night of the 13th day, people made a great uproar saying that I had been pardoned. But again, for reasons that are unclear, I was ordered into exile in the province of Sado. Well, you couldn't behead him. At least get him the heck out of here. Send him to that island. Let him freeze to death. Also a common practice, right? While people speculated from one day to the next, if I would be beheaded, I passed 4 years on Sado. Then on the 14th day of the 2nd month in the 11th year of Bunei, cyclic sign Kinoe Inu, I was pardoned. Now, do you see how he's very careful in notation about these events to take the date, the cyclical sign, all of this information? This is something he pointed out earlier. It wasn't happening with these claims of these other scholars, these teachers. They were just saying stuff like I stabbed the sun and it fell from the sky. No date, no time, no nothing. Just some wonderful magic dream that he interpreted in a very bizarre way. We're talking about Jikaku, right? Okay, so on the 26th day of the 3rd month of the same year, I returned to Kamakura, and on the 8th day of the 4th month, I met with Heino Simon Nojo. That was the leader at the time. I reported on various matters and informed him that the Mongols would certainly invade Japan within that year. So he just went right to the top and said, I'm going to tell you once again, you're doing it wrong, and you're going to end up having the Mongols invade by the end of the year. Things are getting so bad. So, you know, Saman wasn't too happy to hear Nichiren hadn't been silenced. Then on the 12th day of the 5th month, I left Kamakura and came to this mountain where I'm now living. So, in fear for his own life, fearful not of losing his life, but of not being able to continuously practice and propagate the Lotus Sutra, He went to Minobu, which is a very, at the time, very remote, hard to get to. He kind of disappeared from society, so they couldn't just nab him and try to behead him again or send him somewhere. He went in hiding. But he's still communicating with everyone, right? And you'll notice he's listing all these events now, because as a teaching, he's also the informer of Japan. There's no newspaper. There's no Japan Times for people. So they're hearing all these stories and rumors and so forth, certainly not to his best end. So he's taking the opportunity to correct history a bit and let them know what's actually been going on. So that's very informative too, and very supportive to his followers, right? All these things I've done solely to repay the debt I owe to my parents. Remember, debts of gratitude. That's what this Go Show's about. The debt I owe to my teacher, the debt I owe to the three treasures of Buddhism, and the debt I owe to my country. For their sake, I have been willing to destroy my body and to give up my life, though, as it turns out, I have not been put to death after all. So maybe there's something to this debt of gratitude and honoring it. Interesting. Where are we? Well, I think we're coming to the end of this one. One more little paragraph, and then we'll see each other in the next video, okay? If a worthy man makes three attempts to warn the rulers of the nation, and they still refuse to heed his advice, then he should retire to a mountain forest. This has been the custom from ages past, and I have accordingly followed it. So there it is. This isn't just Nichiren doing this. He's also following the cultural imperatives that have been within the Society of Japan, China, so on. So this is historically the way he has warned the shogunate. He has done so several times, at least three times in this document. And so he's doing exactly as is foretold. The wise man then, after advising three times, must retire to a mountain where he'll be protected, but not silenced. And we'll find out more about that in the next video. Thanks so much for being here. I'm so honored that you participate and listen in these videos. The Buddhahood podcast, download it wherever you can. If you're able to, go to, I have links in the video, but since this is also an oral podcast, I'll tell you, go to threefoldlotus.com. Use the paypal.me/SifuSylvain link if you want to donate $1, $5, whatever. Go to my Patreon site, patreon.com/TLK. You'll get there. You'll get alerted of videos as I post them. And I think there's an alert I send out with every podcast too. So you'll get those if wherever you get your podcasts. If you subscribe to the Buddhahood podcast, you'll get notifications every time a new podcast is uploaded, which always coincides with a video in case you want to use the video. Anyway, keep yourself informed, read, study broadly, and keep your practice strong. We are having an effect, whether by looking at the news and TV, it doesn't seem so. Again, as Nichiren would say, use that as your impetus to chant. Use your Gohonzon. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Be well, take care of your health and your loved ones, and I'll see you in the next one.